Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Good day. I'm Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today here on Veterans Radio, and thanks for joining us. We've got some interesting stories for you. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web, veteransradio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We just want to remind you that Veterans Radio podcasts are available on all your favorite streaming platforms, including RSS.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Reeves Across America Radio. So wherever you are, you can find us, whether it's on your mobile phone or your computer or your laptop, your tablet. But listen in to Veterans Radio Podcast. We post something new every week, and you're going to find it informative.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Marine Landon Longrier, who spent 8 years in the Marine Corps, came out as a sergeant, did tours over in Afghanistan, which we're going to talk about, and authored a book called U.S. Marines at the Battle for Sangin during Operation Enduring Freedom. The book covers right behind him and over his head, as is his beautiful wife. Landon, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, it's a very interesting and different sort of book about being over there and fighting in the sandbox, because you grew up with certain groundings in Christianity, a recognition of consciousness and what's right and wrong in a soul. And this really put all of that to the test. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But how'd a high school kid like you down in Texas find his way into the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I, you know, all throughout my upbringing, it was always very apparent to me that serving in the military was an honorable thing. You know, from a Christian background, a major tenet of the Christian faith is that the greatest of the Christian faith are servants. They're servant hearted. You know, the example that Jesus set is that he came to serve, not to be served. And so as a part of being an American and reaping the benefits that generations of those that have gone before us worked hard and sometimes fought wars over to provide for us, the way of life, the freedoms and liberties, you know, the benefits of industry and prosperity. And it was always apparent to me that the day would come that it would be my responsibility to take up the mantle and make sure I continue our way of life forward and do my part, however that looks. And that doesn't always mean military service for some, but it did for me. I always felt that it was my duty to serve, And I always wanted to. I can't really remember a time that I ever didn't want to join the military. You know, 9/11 happened when I was in seventh grade. And while I couldn't fully appreciate the gravity of that situation in my 13-year-old mind, I knew it was important. But I think more important than that is that everything that followed, from the early air bombing campaigns in Afghanistan to the invasion of Iraq, which is a separate issue, but back then, as a kid, I always felt was connected. And then the ground battles that followed in Afghanistan, all of that was during my formative years. And I just understood at the time, in a very simple and fundamental way, that we were fighting on behalf of freedom. We were defending our way of life against people that were attacking and killing us, that hated our way of life. And we were liberating masses of oppressed people into the same, giving others across the world an opportunity to live their lives free of the unwanted control of others. And it was that simple for me. It was.
And part of that, too, is when you went in, you knew what you were going into.
That's right.
This wasn't, I went in peacetime and I wasn't expecting that I might end up in war as a Marine rifleman. You knew where you were going to end up, and you end up in Afghanistan and in Sagan province on a quick response force. Mm-hmm. And the book really takes the reader through how this impacted you at the core. You write about this tension between violence and restraint, and the beauty of the province, and the knowing that that beauty is tied to poppies and opium. I mean, talk about this dichotomy and tension issue that seems to run throughout the book.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. I don't know that I can certainly feel the tension, maybe the dichotomy or the bifurcation, just the paradox of it all is that it was both good and bad in so many ways. And that really came out through the writing. I remember getting to the point that the manuscript was more or less pretty well formed and just kind of realizing that, like, you know, when you're writing a paper in high school or in college, you're taught to take a position, hold a thesis, and defend it, and maybe give some counter arguments, but kind of stay in that position. And once I got well into writing, I realized, like, I don't really have a strong position on whether this was a good or bad experience. It was both. And I don't think you can get away from that. You know, some of the best of humanity comes out in wartime experiences. People really step up to the plate. The technological advances that come during that time period, the heroics on the battlefield, the lengths that men and women will go to protect their fellow Marines or fellow soldiers. I mean, the courage that it takes for somebody to run out into the middle of a street under a hail of gunfire to pull their buddy off the ground that was just shot and wounded and will die if not for that aid. I mean, it's just some of the absolute best of humanity comes out. But it's ultimately on this bedrock of brutality, of human-on-human brutality, which is just tragic. Even in justified wars, when they have to be fought because you have a tyrannical enemy that is not going to stop unless somebody stops them, it's still tragic. And so I felt that. I felt it all the way through. I acknowledge that back then, the war in Afghanistan, it was that we were the good guys. Like, this was a just war. There were people that, for the preceding decades, had attacked and killed innocent people that culminated on the bombings of or the attack on the Twin Towers on September 11th of 2001, and we had to do something about it. In addition to that, the atrocities that were occurring in Afghanistan at the time for just the local populace, they were terrible. You know, during that time in Afghanistan, it was a warlord-run country. There was no centralized government. There were seven predominant historical tribes that were in the nation, and it was the strongest survive. And there was raping and pillaging all throughout. And our opportunity to go in and create some stability and security and give people the opportunity to again live freely was worth doing. But it, again, it was ultimately on this bed of human on human brutality. So I always felt that tension. I don't think that war was ever a part of God's intent for humanity, and the burdens of war that we now have to carry, they're painful. They're still painful at times. I've been able to grow and mature and age out of some of that stuff and move on in life, but the burden still weighs on me at times. So I just it's some of the best.
Let me put some timing context on this, because it's sure. 2011 when you get to Afghanistan, a full 10 years before we pull out of there in a chaos method mode. So that gives people an idea of like how the lack of central government existed that decade before. Right. And also, let me put some context around your growth. I mean, you get out, you go on, you get out of the Marine Corps, you go to pick up your Bachelor's of Art from Dallas Baptist University in Biblical Studies. You then pick up a Master's of Science in Business from there as well. You know, you get married, raise a family. So you have this separation between that 2011 period when you experienced it and being a much more mature, as you said, and kind of grow out of it when you start writing. But writing forces you to go back and relive these experiences, and that's not easy to do.
Right.
Before we get into some specific experiences, explain to veteran radio listeners, Langdon, who may not know what a QRF is.
Yeah, QRF is a quick reaction force. And so it's just a quick reaction or quick response. I think fundamentally a quick reaction force is a ready to go in a moment's notice force to come to the aid of another unit that's in duress that needs reinforcements, or to respond very quickly to any number of incidents that are happening within a strategic area of operation. And so we were on call in a moment's notice. Think about like maybe a firehouse, how firemen are, they have to be kitted up and in the truck and rolling out in 2 to 3 minutes whenever the sirens run off. That's kind of how a quick reaction force operates. We were either stationary, ready to go in moment's notice, or we were out on the road. The predominant amount of our combat experience in Sangin, we were out. We were out on a strategic route within this highly contested area of Sangin, this very tumultuous battle space. And we tried to have presence outside the wire, kitted up in the trucks, ready to respond to anything that came our way, again, at a moment's notice. And so sometimes that was responding to, go ahead.
Well, and what I would point out to our listeners is that what that means is what you're going to end up seeing is sort of, there's already stuff going down.
That's right.
It's already a hot situation when QRF's called out and rolls in. So that puts some context on sort of the adrenaline and the mindset that QRF has to have, because you're being called out to, hey, an IED's just gone off, or this battle's gunfight's going on. We need to get some backup.
That's right.
And you talk a little bit about that sort of, am I excited or am I ashamed? Expand on that a little bit.
It's hard not to get excited. I liken the experience in some ways, and it is it's a really good way to think about it. To being on a sports team, when you're playing football growing up, you're with your team, you're expecting your guys to operate within their positions and do what they're supposed to play by play, and they're expecting you to do the same. You really count on each other. And you're going up against an opposing force that's doing everything they can to stop you. And we are working out, trying to get in shape, trying to get strong, trying to get tough, and playing against this opposing force, and we're trying to beat them. And that's an exciting thing. I think it just scratches something within our, internal makeup as human beings, just the competition in general. Thinking about it from that standpoint, while much more violent and much more extreme, in life or death, training in the military, we're training to go up against opposing forces. And a part of the Marine Corps mentality, especially in the lower ranks in the infantry, we understand the broader strategy. We understand the commander's intent. We understand the strategic initiatives to an extent of what's going on in a war effort at any given time. But the lower ranks don't focus on that. Our focus is on winning battles. And now in the context of Iraq, Afghanistan, there was the COIN mission. Like, it was much more muddy than just force on force engagement. But fundamentally, it's just winning battles. Do your job really well and make sure you're the one that survives it, not the enemy. And so getting into these combat engagements for a young Marine, it's like the pinnacle milestone to achieve in the Marine Corps. Everything around the Marine Corps ultimately boils down to and evolves around winning wars, which means killing the enemy. That's what's ingrained in you from day one. That's the purpose of the Marine Corps. It's the purpose of the military force is to win wars. That's a part of the indoctrination from day one. And, you know, the mentality of combat forces is ultimately, again, just evolves around winning in combat. And so,
and as a young Marine, because, you know, that's what you are at that point. You know, you're just out on the tip of the spear here with at some point after you have had some of these experiences, you can feel maybe a change in yourself, and you write, how do I keep my heart from hardening?
That's right.
And was that a reflection that you had at the time, or a reflection that you had looking back?
No, that was a reflection that I had at the time. I think the struggle of being a Christian at war is, you know, from a biblical perspective, all of humanity are children of God. I think that the way that God feels about humanity in general is the way that we feel about our own children. I think that we're, you know, Genesis says that we're made in his image and likeness. I think our relationships on earth are reflections of the way that he feels about us. And while, again, there are justifiable reasons for engaging in combat, especially in a defensive posture, getting excited about competing against this opposing force that ultimately results in the deaths of human beings, there's a tragedy to it. I think the struggle for me was not engaging in combat, but was the emotional toll and the moral wear and tear. You know, it may be hard to imagine, but in Sangin in particular, which was the most kinetic combat operating zone in the nation at the time, it was a daily struggle against for us versus them. It wasn't this game set match where it was like, okay, we're going to meet on Friday on this battlefield. We don't really know a whole lot about you. You don't know a whole lot about us. We're just going to go up against each other and see how it goes. We're daily studying them and hunting them and trying to figure out what they're doing and why, where their weak points are, where their strong points are, what their motivations are, what their strategic initiatives are, so that we can combat them. They're doing the same thing to us. It gets very personal. You know, showcased in the book, the way that our deployment started, we were getting hit a lot with IEDs, and we weren't able to hit back because the enemy was fighting a guerrilla warfare tactic, and they weren't wanting to go head to head with us. And for right reason, we had a major upside in a lot of ways, but it started getting really personal. And I think the struggle from a heart posture standpoint is starting to feel a good amount of hatred and bloodlust. You know, you get hit. We hear about other friendly forces that are getting hit, guys that are dying and being killed on the, you know, against this enemy that's actively hunting us. You start feeling a lot of very aggressive hatred towards those other human beings.
And you had the book recounts, you know, you developed real personal relationships with those that you're in combat with, and
of course you
lost
right.
folks like Doc Rast and Sergeant Smith. There are both enemy fire instances discussed, but also friendly fire instances discussed, and drone attacks that go wrong. All of this has to be swirling in your consciousness as long as you allow it in. I think some guys coped by like blocking everything out, they lost their moral compass. They had to, or better put, they had to put their moral compass aside in order to survive. But what I really got out of reading here is, as those tragedies occur, your moral compass was active and swinging.
It really impacted me. You're right. Some guys are able to disassociate a little bit easier than others. Maybe my emotional makeup is just a little bit more pronounced than some. I felt all of it. And there were there are moments, most of the time, you can just disassociate, keep it professional, do what you're trained to do. And a major part of Marine Corps training, any combat training ahead of actual combat, is repetition, extreme amounts of iteration, so that when you get in those environments, you're more reactive without thinking about it. You've kind of developed some subconscious muscle memory on how to respond to certain situations. But there are times that it does get emotional and that it does get personal. And, you mentioned the word shame. I think the only shame that I really felt heavily, outside of just the heart tug on just the tragedy of war, was wanting to kill people. I just didn't want destruction on others. I was okay with the war as it was, perfectly fine being there, completely okay killing. The times that I really struggled is whenever I sought it out, is whenever it got so personal, and the vengeance and retributional mentality started taking over. That was my struggle. I think from a moral standpoint, I didn't ever get to the point that I got just outlandishly, vengeful to the point that, the rails were off completely and we would just go killing everybody. Like there's never anything like that. It was always battlefield enemy force on force, but again, I tried to stay professional and not emotional. Just wasn't always able to do that.
The book is U.S. Marines at the Battle for San Juan. We're talking to Landon Longyear, who did 8 years in the Marine Corps, got out in 2015, is now in the commercial brokerage space. Life is pretty good at the moment, but the book also talks about that transition struggle, right? That when you get out, and the loss of the brotherhood that you've so developed, and so there's go read the book to capture some of that, and maybe it'll help understand what either you're going through or somebody you know is going through. But there was one section of the book we've got to talk about before we run out of time, and it's relative to Garcia, one of the guys you're with, and sort of reactions back home during the. Go ahead and tell this story. I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, sure. It's an amazing story, and I remember the conversations that I had with Garcia when it happened. I'll just tell the story, and then I'll give my thoughts on it. Alfredo Garcia was a Marine that I went through boot camp with, and we ended up at the same unit, and we ended up on that deployment together. And he was my best friend. Loved all the guys that I deployed with, and in a real sincere way, depended on them. And we developed such tight knit bonds, whether we wanted to or not, but me and Alfredo were tight. Well, toward maybe the later half of the deployment, we were out in we left Sangin. We were in a place called Delaram in the Farah province at the time, but it's over on kind of the western part of Afghanistan, southwestern part, up against the border of Iran. And we're fighting the opium trade. We're trying to stop poppy plants from exiting Afghanistan and getting into Iran, where it could be cultivated and refined into heroin and other pharmaceuticals, and then shipped out to the rest of the world. During that time, the opium trade was producing roughly 50% of the Taliban's annual funding. So we're trying to cut that revenue stream off. Well, Alfredo was in the turret of a lead truck, four trucks total, on a pretty standard patrol out in the middle of the desert. They happened to be very, very far away from the forward operating base that we were stationed at. And they were just doing a standard presence patrol. I don't recall if there was any strategic intent behind that patrol or not, but they were out. On that particular patrol, they were on the way back to the FOB. They had already found and neutralized at least one IED. There might have been two. And, you know, they, end of the day, they were feeling relatively successful and headed back. Well, Alfredo in the turret of the lead truck, which means he's faced forward, he starts to feel this real heart tug, if you will. One of the things that we had talked about in Sangin all the time was that sometimes the Holy Spirit burdens us for reasons, for important reasons. In particular, we always said, you know, if you ever feel the Lord really tugging on your heart to pray for protection, you should pray for protection. And Alfredo had a moment like that. And he said he just felt something really strong come on, like something was about to happen. And so he starts praying for protection. Well, they're patrolling and he's in the lead truck and they're probably pacing it 10 to 15 miles an hour, maybe less. And Alfredo said 60 seconds after, roughly after that burden hit him and he started praying, a huge explosion went off behind him. And it was the second truck in the patrol had hit a huge 120-pound IED and flipped the truck over, set it on fire, and a fiasco occurred, or, you know, ensued after that, which is detailed in the book heavily. And without going through all of the details for time constraint, when we try to figure out how to shorten this up. I went out as a.
So let me jump in to shorten it up a little bit because
sure.
this stopped me when I was reading it to make my notes, yeah. Which was, you get back and his wife has emailed, what happened and are you okay?
Yeah.
She in turn had heard from somebody at her church service where this woman approached her and said, something bad has happened to your son, but the Lord wants to tell you that he protected him and that he's going to be okay. This is halfway around the world.
Yeah. It was whenever we got back, Alfredo was really mixed up and he came and told me about it. And I had been out there as a part of the response to help those guys. And so we're sitting out there all night long, but in different trucks and hadn't talked. But he told me, whenever that explosion occurred, he was facing forward in his turret right after he got done praying. He said that he saw what he said was the brightest white light he's ever seen in his life come down out of the sky, embrace him, come down towards him, embrace him, and then shoot into that truck behind him. And he was really mixed up about that. He wasn't really sure how to interpret that experience, but he just had this heart tug. He prayed for protection. There, he obviously had some form or fashion of a premonition that something was about to happen, which he and I would associate as being like a God moment. And then he saw this bright white light out of the sky come down and shoot into that truck. And so afterwards, he's not sure how to interpret this. Like you said, we get back 25 hours later. He goes to the computer center and there's an email in his inbox from his mom who at a church service the very day before, while it had happened, before she ever could have found out about it from us, she was freaked out that something had happened. He got her on the phone and she said, a woman in a church service, a prophetic woman came up to me and said, something bad has happened to your son, but the Lord wants you to know that he protected him. And now, like, the experience is validated. Halfway around the world, like you said, in the most incredibly profound way. Alfredo had an angelic encounter after this divine burden to pray for protection. And as it would happen, of the guys in the vehicle, five of them, at least four that I know of, were Christians in a real way. And the explosion should have killed all of them, but every single one of them survived. Some maimed for the rest of their life.
Really, I got to this point in the book, which is towards the back, and make sure you read it all the way through page 169 to get to Garcia's story.
Yeah.
The subtitle on this should have been Christian Warriors or something. It's very, as I say at the outset, there's a lot of books about battles and guys and whatnot. What I found very interesting, Landon, is that you were candid, open about the role that your religious beliefs played throughout and how it played throughout with other folks. And, you know, happy to hear about how well you're doing now and the service that you gave to the country. I appreciate the time that you've given us here on Veterans Radio. I wanted to get to hear and see a story, so thanks for doing that. But yeah, really, really happy to have you on Veterans Radio and tell your unique story of being a Marine in Sangin Province.
You bet, Jim. Yeah, I'm honored to be here, and I appreciate what you do to just kind of showcase war stories. It's really important and it's meaningful. So thank you for the work that you do.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org. We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm with a national practice before the VA, can help you on your claims and your appeals. It can be reached at legalhelpforveterans.com or 1-800-693-4800. We also want to thank our local sponsors. This would include the Charles S. Kettles Chapter of the Vietnam Veterans of America. That's Chapter 310. VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423. The American Legion Irwin Preskin Post 46 in Ann Arbor as well. The VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, and certainly the National Vietnam Veterans of America Association. You can be a sponsor by going to veteransradio.org, clicking on the About Us and our sponsors, and help us out. Keep this program alive for the 21 and 22 years. Keep us going for another 20. Thank you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.